Tired of the macho drinking culture? It's time to redefine manhood. Real Men Quit, the game-changing book that proves real strength isn't in a drink. Take control, boost performance, and reduce stress. Man up and grab your copy on Amazon today, or visit buskerandbrown.com for free merchandise.
Welcome to Flatpack Sober, the wonderful AF, with your host Duncan Buskeran Brown.
Hey there, sober superstars. Welcome to Flatpack Sober, your catalogue of tips, tricks and tactics to design your alcohol-free life. So my guest today is a bit of a special one. I'm quite looking forward to this. So he believes that every Bruce Springsteen fan has a story that's worth sharing, which is kind of weird because I believe everybody who's ever stopped drinking has got a story that's worth sharing. And funnily enough, what he decided to do with those stories was turn them into a podcast. And he's been doing it a little bit longer than I have as well. He's been doing it since 2015. That was when he started the Set Lusting Bruce, the Bruce Springsteen podcast. So he has met a lot of people in the Springsteeniverse. And one of the things he talks about is it's how the music helps you to live, how it helps you to celebrate, but also how it helps you to heal and how it helps you to grieve. So that's kind of like all of the good stuff that we talk about. Baby, we were born to podcast, right?
Absolutely, Duncan. Absolutely.
Fantastic. All right, well, thanks for joining me. Just before we get like really into the boss and all of the good stuff, we need to talk about flat pack furniture. I always start by asking people if they know IKEA. Do you frequent IKEA?
True story. My wife and I had this past weekend, as we're recording this, we had gone to San Antonio, Texas, which is about 5 hours south of Dallas, where I live. And we went on a road trip for her. She often has to go with me. And she wanted to see Wynonna Judd. So I'm like, I'm always up for live music. So we drove down to San Antonio. We got to see Wynonna perform. We then toured the Alamo for the first time, saw a couple of, which is odd to talk about this, two bourbon distilleries, which I will tell you the story behind when we get to more in my sobriety. And on the way back, we passed this huge IKEA. And I asked my wife, I said, have you ever gone into an IKEA? And she goes, yeah, a couple of times. I said, you know, I never have. And she goes, well, it's big and you'll have to do a lot of walking. And I said, yeah. And do they really serve Swedish meatballs? She goes, I don't know. But she goes, it figures you would want to know about the food in the furniture store more than the actual furniture. So yes, I'm aware of IKEA, but I am unfortunately have never gone in one.
Well, at least you kind of like did a bit of homework and a bit of research before I drove past one. That'll do. Anyway, I'm sure you are aware of flat pack furniture and how that stuff works. So if I gave you some flat pack furniture, how would you go about assembling it? What would be your strategy?
So I did not get it from IKEA, but I just bought a new small bookshelf for my home office. Recently, there's been a change in the office and they've needed me to work overnight. So instead of going to the office, I'm working in from my home podcast studio, also our guest bedroom. And so I've ordered a little bitty shelf, and that big package that, you know, is trying to rule the world sent me it. I opened it up and I'm trying to put together, and the darn screws would not go in to the furniture. And I'm just like, why won't this work? Why won't this work? Why won't this work? I'm frustrated. I've got all the screws in and they've just barely gone. They're sticking out like this. And I know as an audio podcast, that's not a good sign. And then I realized I was using the wrong tool, that the Allen wrench that came with it, the screwdriver was for another thing. The Allen wrench was for this. And I started using the Allen wrench and, you know, I'll be darned. They immediately went very easy. And so I was able to put the furniture together. So I guess what I'm supposed to do is read the instructions first, try not to lose my temper, and make sure that you're using the right tool for the job you need, which is actually pretty good advice for almost anything in life, isn't it, Duncan?
That is excellent advice. I'm not sure whether we're going to be able to license the IKEA meditation technique for the calming down bit, but
yes,
certainly using the right tool. So would it be fair to say that you got a bit stuck in before really kind of thinking it through?
Oh, absolutely. And it just, you know, I think one of the things that is a common cliche is that men do not want to read the instructions. They don't want to ask for directions, right? They just, no, we'll figure it out. And it truly does make things a little bit easier if you take the time to read everything, kind of make sure you know what the different parts are, where they're going and things. So I try to do that, but sometimes I'm just dense.
Well, look, here's my spin on that, right? You know, it's not a moral failing, don't worry. It's just that, you know, some people like to get stuck in. On this show, we tend to refer them to them as the dynamos. They're the ones that just get on with life. And I really like to start off with people to kind of find their style, how they approach things, how they approach life. Because what that means is when you're talking, it gives people kind of a frame of reference. What you've probably noticed is that there is a little bit of information on the internet. So rather than just chucking a bit more out there, we'd sort of like try and give the listeners a bit of an idea about how you approach stuff, because that's going to gel really well with some of them. They're going to think, oh, that's exactly not the kind of thing that I should do. If it's not the kind of thing you should do, you should definitely do it.
Yes.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about yourself then.
Sure. I am a 64-year-old. I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. For those of you who are familiar, we're known for multiple things, including South Fork, JR. That's not quite as popular as it was earlier. We are also the city that for the longest time was an overshadow us, whereas President Kennedy was assassinated. And of course, the Dallas Cowboys, the NFL football team. So I am been married since 1984. I have an adult son. I do multiple podcasts. My wife would probably tell you way too much podcasting. I am a big proponent. I love reading a little bit of everything, mostly fiction and lighter reading, comic books. And I watch a whole lot of TV and movies. And I am one of those people that are very happy that it's the countdown to Christmas on the Hallmark movie channel, because I grew up watching Disney movies and where everyone, there's a happy ending and people find true love. And my wife watches basically murder porn and the Lifetime channel movies, and I watch the Hallmark channel movie, and yet somehow we make it work.
Well, I think the appropriate cliche would be something around opposites attracting, wouldn't
yes,
it?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yeah, yes.
No, brilliant, brilliant. Tell us about your experiences with alcohol then.
Yeah, so I've done a lot of thinking about this over the years. I did not realize it, but I was raised by a alcoholic father, and my mom was very anti-alcohol, and I now realize why. It's because of his alcoholism. My grandparents were very staunch Southern Baptist, where, you know, Duncan, one drink led you to you're in a ditch, homeless. You're a bum. We didn't know they were homeless when, you know, in the 60s when I was, you know, a young kid. So I just never drank. And then by the time I was in high school, I did not have a lot of, we had just moved, we moved around a lot when I was a kid. So not drinking became part of my persona. And so when I started dating my wife, she loves to tell me now that she did not trust me because I didn't drink. Like, wait a minute. Then very quickly, she realized that she had a built-in designated driver. And so that is not a bad thing. So unlike a lot of people that have had problems and then later had to go sobriety through a 12-step program or whatever, it was just not something that ever appealed to me. And to this day, I am one of the few people, like when the doctor says, how often do you drink? Never. And, you know, and the doctor goes, okay, you know, occasionally, no, I just don't drink. And my brother, who recently died, was an alcoholic. And he was someone who didn't struggle with his sobriety, but he struggled being a healthy non-drinker. He stayed very angry and had a lot of problems of, you know, one of the things that he and I struggled with is he was very active in AA, and I was proud of him for it. But it was almost like this blank check. Like if he said something inappropriate or said something, well, I'll just owe you an amends. And I'm like, no, the whole idea is for you to not pull this crap anymore. The whole point is you need to improve your behavior, because if I do something wrong, I can't blame it that I'm overweight. I can't blame it because I can blame it because I'm an idiot sometimes, but I cannot use the get out of jail free card that, well, I'm struggling with this. So you just need to forgive me that I'm not getting better. I absolutely do forgive you and I do love you. And I'm not trying to be a judgment to people that are struggling, Duncan, but this idea I'm sometimes like, but you need to get better. You need to change your behavior. And we worked through that. And I'm very happy to say that the past 3 or 4 years before he passed away, he and I became closer than ever. We ended up really, taking care of any of the baggage between us and were as close as you could be living in different cities till he passed.
There's an awful lot in that, but I think that's very interesting. I mean, obviously, having a little bit of an idea, you've told us your story, gives us a bit of an idea of your brother's story, of course, his experiences are going to be his own, aren't they? But most people listening would be like you, very, very prepared to forgive him for where he got to. But what you're sort of saying is you can't just then use that as a label and say, well, this is the label that defines who I am and how I behave. You need to kind of move past that.
Yeah, it is. And I think once again, as you're saying, that's only my observation. Well, I'll give you an example. And this is one of the things that helped him to see a different light. And by the way, my addiction is food. I have been overweight my whole life. I continue to fight it on a regular basis. Honestly, one of the reasons I probably don't drink is I'd rather have my calories in cake than alcohol. So he was also overweight and he needed to pass a physical to get hired at a job. So it was going to be tough, Duncan, for him to pass this physical. He was a heavy smoker. He was overweight. He's at the doctor's office. So understand you need to pass this physical to get this job, and you need this job. The doctor walks in, "How are you doing?" And my brother said, "Well, pretty good till you made me wait 45 minutes." So, okay. I said, "Let's think about this, Dean. You need this man on your side. You need him to give you grace with how short of breath you are and your weight. And you decide it's a good idea to insult him because you were inconvenienced waiting in a room." And he went, "Oh, I mean, do you understand what I mean about not thinking through things? And yes, it's good you're not drinking, but that anger just you shot yourself in the foot for no reason, And so that was one of the examples I gave him when we were having a heart to heart. And it did, I won't say it's a totally a road to Damascus moment, but it did made him, "Oh, I see what you're saying now of why you think this is possibly unhealthy." And I think you, and I think other people who are going through their struggles through whatever addiction they're having, it is the process. There's more to it than just not drinking or taking drugs or just not whatever your addiction is. There is a process of how to do that and do it with grace and to do it with a way that you continue to move forward as a competent human being.
I don't know. I think you've really hit on something there, haven't you? Because it's almost like the total natural reaction when somebody has inconvenienced you. You sort of want to kind of like, ah, kind of thing. And I mean, I've lost count of the number of times I've done that when I'm trying to get a refund or something. And it's never quite as simple as it sounds, is it? So you need that other person on side. And then often your opening gambit is something that completely alienates them. And then you wonder why you're not getting from them what you need.
Yes, absolutely.
I think that's such good advice. I mean, having the ability to sort of see things from other people's points of view and to see how your behavior impacts on them. And that's the stuff, isn't it? That's where you get to building the kind of life that you want. That's how you get the job, isn't it?
Well, yeah. And, the other thing is to throw it a little bit, because I'm sure we'll talk about music in a little bit, but you think that Elvis never had anyone who would call him on his crap because he surrounded himself with people who were totally dependent on him and that, surrounded by yes men. And you need to have someone, whether you're sober, whether you're not sober, that will call you on your crap, that will tell you, "Hey, Jesse, you're full of bull." And one of my best friends did this years ago, and since then it has been a standard statement in my house. I was telling him a story and I was complaining about something at work. And he looked at me and said, supportive or logical? I said, supportive. He says, oh yeah, they're crazy. This is just dumb that they're even thinking about you doing this. Okay, logical. Well, if you think about it, and he shared their thing. And we use that at our house now to say, are you wanting me to be supportive or you want me to be logical? Because sometimes, Duncan, we just want you to be supportable. Yeah. I just want you to tell me that I'm right to be angry, or I'm right to be frustrated, and I don't need a devil's advocate. I just need you just to say, yes, you're, you know. But other times, you need someone to go, okay, I understand why you're feeling that way, but let's think about it another way. And could you possibly, and that's when you have to put aside your ego, you have to put away your thoughts and go, oh, maybe you are right, and maybe they're right, and maybe I need to rethink about what's going on.
No, that's really, really interesting. You just reminded me of a competition that I lost. And it's reminded me that I needed both of those things. You know, immediately afterwards, I needed the supportive. I needed the, yeah, you were better. You were robbed. It was terrible. Yeah. I needed that because my ego was a little bit bruised and I was still drinking at the time. So it was absolute nightmare. Yeah. Ended up having an argument with my wife about it. The next day, I did need somebody to say, yeah, but you lost because he was better. And he was better for the following reason. And if you work harder, then you will get better than that. And yeah, I'll kick him into a tin can these days. But
yes.
No, who is it for you? Do you have one person that is very skillful at operating both of those things?
Yeah.
Or do you have people for this?
So I would tell you that I've been lucky. Linda and I met in 1980. Linda's my wife. Once she got past not trusting me because I didn't drink, you know, we dated 4 years, got married in 84, and we've been together ever since. So there are times when, much to my frustration, she is someone who will call me on mine, right? But also at the same time is always my cheerleader. And sometimes she will, and I think both of us do that. If you've been in a relationship a long time, you may misread the situation, right? You're thinking, oh, they need me to be logical. I need to address this. And then it's like, no. I purely needed you to be my soft place to fall. The world's going to tell me what I'm doing wrong. I need you to tell me what's great. And then I have an adult son. I talked about Chris, who is very good at, he will ask, hey, dad, do you want to know just, and I will go, yes. And, you know, sometimes my ego is, it's a little tough to have the guy that, you know, you changed his diapers telling you. But at the same time, it's kind of cool that in his own way, he's learned different things and now can give me that advice.
Yeah. Sometimes it's nice when the student beats the master, as it were.
It does. Absolutely. Yes.
Cool. Because I mean, I think that's something that comes up time and again about having community and having relationships and having support around you. I mean, that is absolutely crucial. And I think doing both of those things, that kind of the support and occasionally telling you to buck your ideas up, I love it. Anything else you think around community that has kind of like helped you to excel and do the stuff that you do?
Yeah, one of the things is, you know, I often get asked about, you know, I'm thinking about doing a podcast. And my advice is, okay, first off, make sure your topic is broad enough that you're not going to run out of things to talk about. Secondly, get 3 or 4 episodes in the can, because you always want to have a buffer, because there will be weeks when your guest shows up, doesn't show up, or you don't necessarily have a topic. And 3, make sure it's something you want to discuss, that even if no one listens, you still want to do it weekly or whatever your thing is. And I think that's, I get asked sometimes, well, do you think anyone will care? And I'm like, I don't know, but I think it's interesting. Like, you know, I reached out to you and I said, well, you know, I kind of have a little different sobriety story. So I don't know if mine would be something your audience would care, but I'd love to talk to you if you want to. And you said, yes, that sounds great. You know, and to tie this to him, his father, he talks about in his autobiography that his father, he wasn't a good drunk. And so for the longest time, Bruce did not drink whatsoever. And when he was older, he decided he would start drinking. And it turned out he's a really happy drunk. And Bruce says, I don't have the dark demons that my dad did. But for the longest time, he wouldn't. And It's interesting, I think, Duncan, the people that how much your parents can influence you to drinking or not drinking. For example, I've never been someone who wanted tobacco because both my parents smoked incredibly strong and I was just disgusted by the thought. I don't care if someone else smokes, but it was something that never appealed to me because of that almost a negative influence. So I think there are people that, because of the negative influence seeing their parents, they may decide to be choose a sober lifestyle.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's enormously interesting, you know? Like, I meet a lot of people who smoke, and some of them, they genuinely hate smoking, and particularly when it's had really serious implications on the health of people that they've loved. But they then went on to smoke. And for everyone you meet who ate fun of it, put them off, there's somebody who ended up in getting into it. And I guess that's true of you and your brother, isn't it? That you said he was a smoker. It put you off, but it Well, no, turned him on is not exactly the right way of putting it. But he went one way, you went the other way. Did you?
Well, yeah, and to say, like when he told me, he says, I originally started smoking because it kept the buzz going longer. So even that, his addiction personality was that. I always laugh at when we've talked a lot about it, right? That we both had our own issues with our father and our mother, and both of us coped with it differently. You know, I became someone who really tried to please a lot of people and fed my ego and concerns with food. He, on the other hand, embraced being more like our father, where he was grumpy, no one likes him, and did alcohol. So, certainly not judging one addiction is better than the other because you can die of a diabetes coma or your alcoholic coma, right? One addiction is the other. It is interesting how the same household, we're 10 years apart, but roughly the same, I mean, all the same circumstances, and it took us two different paths.
And what I think, I mean, I totally agree with you. I never really try my hardest, should I say, not to judge people on the choices that they make, because one of the privileges I have of talking to people on this podcast, but also the one-to-one work that I do, even the group work, is you people share their stories and you see how much suffering and pain there is in their stories. And it's like, well, that does not give you carte blanche to behave any way you want, but it at least does give us some understanding as to why people kind of end up choosing the courses that they do. But I think there's something also really, really interesting. And as you mentioned, Bruce, now, he was a driven guy, wasn't he? I mean, no, I've read Born to Run 3 times. It's excellent. I genuinely recommend it to anybody, even if you don't, if you're not like a massive fan. It's a great book and so insightful, particularly if you're interested in creativity. But one of the things, like, he kind of like took that pain and suffering from his childhood and he just mainlined it straight into music. And it was all about just like the work, wasn't it? And it's funny that as a society, we praise that. We say, oh, well, you're working so hard, you're doing good things. That's excellent. But if you actually take that same pain and that same suffering and you put it into something like alcohol, like drugs, like destructive behavior of any sort, we're then like, oh, well, that's bad. But it kind of comes from the same root, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that is really well said, Duncan. And I want to echo, obviously I'm a massive Springsteen fan, so I was going to love the biography no matter what. But when you see how open he is about his depression and the struggles he had, I just recently read a book, All the Leaves Are Brown, the story of the Mamas and the Papas. And John Phillips was obsessed with being a successful musician. He wanted to have commercial success. And I certainly think Bruce wanted people to hear his music. But to me, it feels more like he wanted to make good music. And hopefully people will like it. But it was more about making good music more than it was. And yes, the question, and this is so, where do you throw the scale of, we joke, I'm not obsessed with Bruce, I'm passionate about it, right? I'm not an obsessed fan, I'm a passionate fan. But when does this passion become an unhealthy obsession, right? And there was a wonderful scene. We were at 4th of July, and my sister-in-law is a dietitian, and they were talking about different diets and everything. And Robin said, no, this is a fad diet. If a diet tells you can't eat bananas, it's a bad diet. And so my wife and her sister said, okay, Robin, what's the right kind of diet? She goes, a mixture of foods in moderation. And my wife looks like, do any of us look like we embrace moderation? And I think, what is the line between you're passionate, you're driven, and how does it stop from being unhealthy? And in the book, Bruce talks about that Patty, his wife, for those who may not be aware, had to pull him and say, no. Like Bruce is like, oh, can't worry about the kids right now. I've got inspiration for a song. And she's like, no, if it's a good enough song, it'll come back. But right now, your priority is the kids. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that hits on it, doesn't it? I bet it's not that difficult. You've probably interviewed them, but it's probably not that difficult to find somebody who's just gone far too far in, gone to all the concerts, spent all their money on the merch, bought like the obscure bootleg recordings, and it's cost them. It's genuinely got in the way of their life, cost them relationships, possibly cost them job, all of that kind of stuff because they took that obsession too far.
So I don't know if you've ever watched the movie Free Enterprise. It is a wonderful tongue-in-cheek movie about people obsessed with Star Trek. And the beginning of the movie, the boyfriend is telling his girlfriend he can't go on a ski trip with her because he bought a Star Trek collectible. And she is ripping him that he bought a stupid toy instead of going on a trip, and she misnames a Star Trek episode. And you can see it in his face that don't correct her, don't correct her, but he can't resist. And he corrects her, and that was it. And he knew it was dumb for him to do it. He knew it was foolish, but he couldn't stop himself. And luckily, most of the people that I interact with in the Springsteen community that have been my guests are passionate but reasonable. But there are some people that this latest tour, Bruce has not changed his set list as much as he normally does. And there are people, Duncan, that are furious at him that how dare he not change his set list. I'm going to four shows, and I would not have paid for four shows if I'd known you were going to do the exact same songs on each show. First off, first world problems. And secondly, I can understand being disappointed, but angry that this guy who's playing to thousands of people is not doing exactly what you want. Maybe you need to rethink yourself.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's very interesting. I spend a lot of time thinking about alcohol, and now I'm definitely going to spend some time thinking about how I became a bit of a fanboy. And I did. I was just like promoting the obscure band that I'd just found to everybody I would be prepared to listen. And I think it is quite a good analogy. I mean, of course, there is a difference between music and alcohol, in as far as music is not fundamentally a poison in and of itself. Then again, there are so many things that people develop process addictions around. Shopping is not fundamentally poisonous. Neither is gambling. I mean, you might not like it. You might not like it from a moral standpoint, but it is not fundamentally going to poison you. Yet people ruin their lives around, shopping, work.
It is. And, this anything to its extremes is unhealthy, which is duh. But it is that you think of the someone who, this is now out of date. So I apologize in advance to any of your listeners who identify as female. But I heard a phrase once that I buy books the way some women buy shoes. Just like, oh, I gotta have them. And I probably have right now this bookshelf that I talked about that I had trouble installing. I have probably seven books waiting to be read, and that's just the ones that are right here. That isn't even counting other books and stuff because I wanted to have them. Luckily, I'm not missing my mortgage because of that. A few years ago, my wife did a full Ironman. She ended up not finishing, but it was just a glorious day because she just left everything out there. Literally, she ended up having to go in an ambulance to the emergency room because she's not only just dehydrated, but just her chemistry was off. So she was fine. But anyway, so this would crack people up. I said, okay. And it cost X amount of dollars. You're kidding. Yes, and she had to volunteer the year before she wanted to run so that she would be sure and have a slot because it sells out so quickly. What? I mean, it's people doing this many miles that you're having to pay like $600 and it sells out? Yes. I just can't believe that. We all do things that are passionate to us that other people seem weird. And we'll have that discussion with my Linda. She's, all you talk about is Doctor Who and Bruce Springsteen. And I said, okay, yeah. I said, have you listened to your friends after your race where all you're talking about is how good the race was, how was it going, what are we doing, we're going to train, what are we going to do? Well, that's different. How? And she's now understands that what I remember, I was at a comic book convention and there were all the people dressed up as Klingons and different characters, and all the college football people, because there was the same time in Atlanta, there was a bunch of college footballs and they were all there in their football gear, you know, their jerseys and shirts. And they were looking at the cosplayers like, y'all are so sad. It's like, it's the same thing. It's just both of you embracing your passions.
Yeah, you have far more in common than actually what separates
yes,
you.
Exactly, yeah. Yes.
No, that is beautiful. And I guess for me, that point about going beyond out, beyond it, kind of really still controlling your life, it's like find a better obsession, whether it's podcasting or Springsteen or Iron Man's or, you know.
Well, and I see sometimes a judgment. And like I had someone on the podcast that said, people talk about addiction, but, you know, they're now obsessed with tobacco or they're obsessed with exercise versus alcohol. And I didn't want to get in a debate, but I think all of us have the tendency to want to be obsessed about something. And the thing you have to do is try to find something that you can steer your energy to and your drive that is healthy for you and your family. And so going back to, I have gone with my wife to the Kentucky Bourbon Trail multiple times. And it is hilarious because they pour us all the samples. I smell the bourbon and then hand her the sample. So she ends up drinking both samples and she's like, okay, you got to get me a burger because I'm starting to feel pretty buzzed. But she doesn't have a problem with alcohol. And I don't want to even try to see if I'm going to have that problem, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but see, the thing is, what strikes me talking to you is that one way or another, doing the work, living the life, whatever, it's given you an amount of self-awareness. And maybe kind of that, I guess, is the point, that it almost doesn't matter what you get obsessed with if you've got the self-awareness to realize where it is, that it has a box, that it fulfills a purpose in your life, but that it should not overflow from that box and it should not get in the way of the things that are really important. Yes, write that song, Bruce, but the moment, you know, your daughter needs you kind of thing. Is that where you're coming from?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, one of my latest musical obsessions is a singer-songwriter named Jason Isbell. He does mostly Americana, and he is a very vocal about his sobriety. He was one of the guitar players on the Drive-By Truckers. He would drink a whole bottle of Jack Daniels when they were performing, and that was just the warm-up for his drinking. And he got sober a little over 10 years ago. And this doesn't happen always, but in a weird thing, and if I ever got a chance to interview him, I'm wondering, the first album he made sober was his breakout album, Southeastern. It was his Born to Run. It broke new sales records. Critics loved it. He won all kinds of awards. So it isn't always that case, though, Duncan, is it, that when you get sober, all of a sudden your life is amazingly better? Because that isn't the case always. You still got all your problems. And, you know, but I think it is kind of cool. In his case, life immediately said, hey, being sober, you've written some of the best music in your life. Maybe it's a good idea you don't go back to drinking.
Yeah. No, so I think, obviously, if you're on Instagram, when you get sober, everything is amazing, isn't it?
It's like, yes.
Life becomes perfect because that's social media for you, and therefore it's a complete lie. And it's a shame that people in the community don't talk about it a little bit more, because there's quite a lot of like fairly robust, you know, science and research around what happens when you stop drinking, which is generally you get a bit of a bonus. You know, you stop putting poison into yourself so you feel better, so your life satisfaction goes up a little bit. But as everything gets back to normal and life kind of kicks in again, you start to notice all the stuff that you were ignoring whilst you were drinking, whether that's logistic stuff, whether that's physical stuff, whether that's emotional stuff, whatever you were attempting to run away from. you know, you have to actually face it now. So you tend to have this little bit of a dip where you have to go through, you have to do the work, as it's often called, and then it starts to go up and then it starts to get better. So with that obvious caveat, my experience is sadly not quite the same. I mean, I didn't move straight to a breakout album, but the difference for me, I wrote, you know, like the whole of my life, I've been a writer. And when I was drinking, I wrote and I never really showed anybody and I never really did anything with it. And it's only since I stopped drinking that I've actually got it out there. And in actual fact, the first book I ever wrote, which was about local government and is very, very niche, shall we say, I hardly sell any of it. You know, it hardly sells at all. I mostly give it to people in local government and then we sometimes work together off the back of it. So it's been quite a useful tool one way or another, but it certainly wasn't my breakout book. My breakout book has just come out, by the way. It's called Real Men Quick. I have to apologize to you, because I had a load of really great metaphors about Springsteen and I cut them all. I feel bad about that now.
So here's what I want is I want to invite you to join me on Set Lusting Bruce. I would love to have you share your story to my audience, to talk about your journey to sobriety, your journey to Springsteen fandom, and to promote the book.
We'll call it a date, shall we?
Okay, let's do it. Absolutely.
Perfect. Well, that sounds like a fairly good point where we should start wrapping things up. And you already mentioned the meatballs. I always like to finish with the IKEA meatballs. You would like to try them, but you have not tried them. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
Okay. Meatballs for me, I'm vegan, so like I wouldn't like them anyway. But even when I was eating meat, you know, I was not a huge fan. But what I noticed was when you go to the cafe there, everybody buys the meatballs. It's like you're in IKEA, you've got to have the meatballs. Right. Nobody really likes them, but you've got to have them. So for you, what is that thing in life that, you know, like nobody really wants to do, but everybody ought to do?
So here's my controversial take. I have a couple, and they're both Bruce Springsteen related. So Jungle Land does not speak to me emotionally. Intellectually, and by the way, if you aren't a Bruce Springsteen fan, many people will say Jungle Land is one of his greatest songs. It has an iconic saxophone solo that Clarence Clemon did that is absolutely beautiful. But the song itself, I would give it a 3 on a scale 1 to 5. It just doesn't speak to me emotionally. And every Springsteen fan is now throwing a book at this player because they go, it's epic. The other one is when people were complaining about the static set list and someone said, but he did Trapped for us. I'm like, Trapped is just another cover song to me. I think, you know, so those are the ones I don't get. You know, those are the biggest things I would think I do. Grits, when people ask you, what is the food you can't stand? And I said, I can't stand grits. And that's a big Southern dish that goes with her. Yeah.
I've never tried it, but we'll have to do that podcast in person and we can.
Yes, absolutely. Indeed.
So how can people find out more about you, listen to all of your various podcasts?
Sure. So I do multiple podcasts. You can find me at Jesse Jackson DFW on Twitter, aka X. I do Set Lusting Bruce, which is a podcast where I talk to fans of music from around the world, not just Bruce Springsteen fans. I do B-side episodes where I have someone who loves Janet Jackson or Van Morrison or Aretha Franklin or the Rolling Stones will come and they'll share me their fandom. Next Stop Everywhere is my Doctor Who podcast where Charles Skaggs and I every other week discuss if there's new Doctor Who happening. We discuss that. The other ones we do Classic Who. Perfectly Good Podcast is where me and my co-host are counting down every John Hiatt song in alphabetical order. Most people do not know who John Hiatt is. He is a singer-songwriter that is mostly known as a songwriter, and so we're trying to get more people to listen to that. And the last one is Last Best Hope for Conversation, where two buddies and I, there's three of us, are going through J. Michael Stravinsky's Babylon 5, episode by episode. I've seen every episode. They've seen none. So we have this discussion. Setlistingbruce@gmail.com. Is the email address. If you want to be on the show, just reach out to me. Whoever your favorite musician is, I want to talk to him.
Yeah, I mean, but what's not to like? And we didn't even get onto Doctor Who. Man, I used to be so scared of Doctor Who. I used to like totally hide behind the sofa when I was a kid.
That is the cliche that is true. right? I mean, that is just, yeah, they just love that. Yeah.
Our sofa was up against the wall and I still used to hide behind
yes,
it.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So look, well, we will do it again now. I mean, that was this next time will be on your podcast. But that was really, really fascinating. I'll obviously put all of the links into the show notes so people can find those at Flatpak Sober. But in general, thank you so much. Really, really enjoyed chatting to you today. So thanks for your time.
Thank you, Duncan. This was a joy. I appreciate it. Please reach out to me, guys, if you want to be on the show. And I'm going to do mine. Please go to wherever you get your podcast, rate and review Duncan's wonderful show. He probably talks about this, but you guys do not understand how happy it makes us when we get a new review. It just brings us so much joy in our lives. So go and do that for us, please.
Yes, ironically, I ended up having a fairly long conversation with somebody on the podcast about testimonials and going to try and get testimonials for your website. And yes, it is one of the things we spend an inordinate amount of time attempting to do. So yes, we'll work for reviews. Thank you.
Exactly, yes.
Well, that's all we've got time for on Flatpak Sober. But don't miss the next episode. Seriously, it's a scorcher. I am interviewing the founder of Drink Sober, Not Boring, and this episode is definitely not boring. It is grindingly honest, slightly controversial, but it is definitely not boring. It is not one that you want to miss. And also, don't miss flatpaksober.com. Go on, visit, check out the show notes, take our sober styles quiz, figure out how you should be doing sober. And honestly, next time, it's going to be amazing. So join me for the next episode of Flatpak Sober.
I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we did bringing it to you. If you love what you're hearing and want to stay updated, join the Flatpak Sober community on Facebook. Don't forget to click the subscribe button.